From the Goodnight Scholars Program at NC State, I'm Brianna Soto, and this is Have a Good Night. On this episode, I sat down with Cameron Brown and talked about his experience with using an enrichment grant to create a rocket, majoring in aerospace, high-powered rocketry club, driving with explosive rocket motors, Lego brick build, retreats, and mountains to coast. Without further ado, let's get into the episode. What's something that seems like it would be really easy, but is actually really difficult?
I would say making paper airplanes or ring gliders or anything like that. They are really simple to build, but if you actually want them to fly, it's quite complicated. Aerodynamics in general is just far too complicated.
And you actually had to create a plane earlier this year, right? Or was it last year where you made it out of balsa wood?
Yeah, for my flight stability and control class, the kind of the final project for that class is you make a glider out of balsa wood. But it's again, the construction is kind of the easy part. You spend, a week or two just in really in-depth analysis and doing all the math and trying to figure out how it's going to fly and be stable. There's a lot of really nasty equations that go into that. But it flew.
And since we're on the topic of planes, you're in aerospace. Why do you decide on aero?
Okay, so when I was in the fourth grade, there was a group from the Department of Defense called Starbase that came to my elementary school. And they spent a week with us just teaching us about space and rocketry and that sort of thing. Throughout the week, we were building one of those Estes rockets. And at the end of the week, we got to launch them. And that whole process of just kind of, building a rocket and then eventually being able to launch it and see it land and everything just kind of captivated me. And so I kind of knew from that day forward I wanted to build rockets.
Nice. And how do you think it's different from when you were a kid, now actually taking all the classes, doing some work with it?
I would say, obviously now it's, back then it was a whole lot of just putting things together and then hoping it flies. but now it's a lot of really in-depth math and proving to people that what you're going to do is actually going to work.
And what have you done at State to put you into the aerospace world? Because you can't just only take classes about aerospace to get experience. So what are you doing?
Yeah, so outside of just classes, I've been a part of the High Powered Rocketry Club here at State since I got here. It's one of the first things I did was join that club. And I've loved every minute of it. We've been able to, build rockets throughout the past 2.5 years or so. And we have about 4 to 5 launches a year. And it's really hands-on. And you can go into that club and not know anything about rocketry. And you can leave it with just a wealth of knowledge. In fact, last year's president, she came into the club not knowing anything. And at this very moment, she has a job at NASA. So that club will really take you a long way. But aside from that, I've, been in that club for the past 2 years. I've learned a lot from that. We participate in the NASA Student Launch Competition every year, which actually serves as the senior design project for the seniors in the club. And so I've been able to travel with them to the competition in Huntsville, Alabama for the past 2 years, and I'll be going again this year. So overall, it's just a really great experience to you know, have some hands-on engineering and to just kind of learn how everything works.
And other than some of the things that you've talked to, what are you doing in the club? What are you making? What are you working on? I know you're always in EB3 in that little lab with a bunch of people in there. So what are you exactly doing in there?
Okay, so this year I'm serving as the structures lead for the senior design team. So I am basically designing all of the like parts of the rocket. So like the lengths of the airframe, the bulkheads, the fins, pretty much all of that kind of stuff. And then I, you know, we start with absolutely no materials on the table. So then I have to like source the parts and, you know, purchase them. And then, you know, once they get to us, we actually build them. And building is a very long and delicate process. But there's also, just throughout the years, there's an experimental team within the Rocketry Club called Wolfworks, which is kind of a spin on Skunkworks, if you know about that. That's the development of the SR-71 Blackbird. They use that code name.
I don't think anyone would know what that is.
Well, either way, that's what it comes from. But yeah, they do some experimental stuff in there also, so they've worked on air brakes, rovers, and right now they're working on a supersonic rocket. So I've been really involved in a lot of different projects, but right now it's mostly geared towards senior design.
And is the competition, is it more group-based? Like, is it one group building rockets, or is it each person is building their own, or how does that work?
So for the NASA Student Launch Competition, it's the whole senior design team is like coming together to build one rocket. So we are like, there's a payload lead, payload electronics lead, structures lead, which is me, aerodynamics lead, recovery lead. And so for the first half of the year, we build what's called a subscale, which is just a smaller version of the model we're going to take to competition. And so we're basically just gonna, you know, launch that at the end of the first semester, take the data from that and prove to NASA that the concept works. And then the spring semester, we build the full scale model, which we're actually gonna take to competition. And that's, you know, we take that and launch it at competition.
And I remember you were working on your own rocket for Rocketry. And you actually used an enrichment grant for that, for all the materials. I remember it was pretty extensive. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so within the Rocketry Club, we kind of encourage people to earn their like certifications in high-powered rocketry, which we get through the Tripoli Rocketry Association. And you know, there's three levels of certification. It's literally just like level one, level two, level three, which I'm just going to call L1, L2, L3 from now on, because that's what people refer it to as. But yeah, they each have different design criteria, and also like different constraints on what constitutes like a successful flight. Generally, you know, it has to launch and it has to be recovered. And it has to be recovered in such a way that you could just throw another motor in it and light it again the same day with minimal repairs. But yeah, so I earned my L1 like about a year ago. And I decided to use that same rocket to try to earn my L2. And to do that, I had to like basically redesign the airframe and like make some changes to it. I had to purchase like some electronics to do a different method of recovery. And yeah, basically it was a little bit more expensive than I'd thought it would be, but it, you know, it was still manageable.
How's the design for that? Because I remember I helped you a little bit with the design and you were kind of struggling, because I wouldn't think that the design, like not even how it's built, but like the decor and how it's painted is kind of important. And a lot of people like that aspect. Like, I know you had a couple different options, if you could talk a little bit about that. Because I remember we ultimately ended up doing Sonder, and the pale blue dot was an idea.
Yes. So, it is kind of important to a lot of people to, like, you know, name the rocket and make it look good and everything. But like that part is not required. Like, I mean, I've seen people just throw something completely unpainted, and earn their certification and walk away from it. You know, this thing meant a lot to me. So I wanted it to be, you know, beautiful. I wanted it to look good, and I wanted a name that I like. And so I did think about incorporating like the pale blue dot, which is a famous speech by Carl Sagan, into that, but ultimately went with Sonder. I was asking Soto quite a bit about like what she thought of the design of, you know, throughout designing that. So
yeah, and I remember I gave you a couple of different ideas, and I think what you ultimately ended up, correct me if I'm wrong, but using the colors of Sonder, so not necessarily like putting on something that people would know that what it is, but using the colors that it used.
Yeah, so the rocket basically contains a gradient. It's like a blue or black, purple, blue, light blue, white. Basically, it's supposed to be kind of reminiscent of the atmosphere going into black as you get higher and higher up. There's not much more to that, but.
And how was getting all the materials? Because you got a lot of stuff that normal people do not buy. You might be considered insane.
Yeah. So there are a lot of components, like, and even, you know, I made like a master sheet that contained, you know, all the components that I needed, the price of everything, but almost always, like, you're gonna forget something, especially when you just have the idea in your head and you draw it out and everything. Like, it just doesn't matter. You're gonna forget something. So I had to deal with some of that. But yeah, the materials are quite different from probably anything else people would buy. The main thing is the motor. And for solid rockets, you know, rocket motor, rocket fuel kind of are just in the same category as the same thing. I bought a rocket motor. And you have to like have proof that you're trying to do a certification. Or like if you have already done your certification, you have to provide proof that like you're certified. The L1 just kind of allows you to buy motors within a certain impulse class. The L2 does that too, but you actually, earn the ability to mix your own propellant after that too. But, they have like a hazmat shipping thing that they have to do, because it is an explosive. And, so the hazmat shipping is oftentimes just about as much as the motor itself. We try to like order a bunch of motors at once so they can combine that hazmat shipping, but that's what I did for the L2.
So since you were essentially buying explosives and explosive materials, you couldn't exactly, when you're going to competition, take your rocket and put it on a plane. So you actually had to drive, right?
Right, right. So when we go to competitions, you know, fortunately, it's not too bad for us going to Huntsville, Alabama from Raleigh, but there were teams that came from like Washington State and like they can't fly because we're bringing rocket motors, which are explosives. and no matter what you do, they are not going to let you fly with that. So, you know, it takes some teams like just days and days to get out there. But fortunately, it's just a day for us.
How did the flights go? You had multiple ones.
I did.
One went a lot better than the other, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, for the L1, that went really well. And fortunately, I didn't have to redo that. The L2 did not go so well on the first launch. But it wasn't actually an issue with, like, the electronics or, you know, any kind of like concept, you know, any conceptual errors there. It was something literally so stupid. We attached the parachutes and like to the rest of the rocket with shock cord, and you know, to do that you have to use a quick link, which is like, I don't know, think about like a carabiner, but you like, you know, screw it together. And I don't know, I guess just, you know, with the nerves and everything, I just didn't screw down one quick link all the way. And, you know, whenever the rocket launched, it went up and it went really well. And then it separated. The first separation was fine. And the second separation occurred, and, the shock cord loop just slid out of that tiny little gap in the quick link, and basically the fin can, to the part that actually has the fins, it fell about 3,000 feet and landed in an irrigation ditch which had water in it. Fortunately, it wasn't too damaged, but it was enough that I was gonna have to do a reflight for my certification. And yeah, that the second time I flew it, I was able to get my certification. Separations and everything went perfectly. And so, yeah, now I have my level 2 certification.
And do you get to test them beforehand going somewhere else, or you have never tested them and you only test them when you're at competition or the certification?
So for our personal rockets, the only way that we test them is for our personal rockets, the only way that we can really test them, is we have to do something called ejection testing. And we try to do that the night before we launch. The way the sections on a rocket separate is you have, blast caps filled with black powder, and then an E-match goes in there, and you can like tell the E-match when to ignite the black powder, you know, using like an altimeter or whatever. But we have to make sure that, you know, the way that we pack parachutes and the shock cord and everything allows for that section of airframe to pressurize and actually separate. So we do that with every single rocket we launch. That's just something that you really need to do. But in terms of like flight testing or anything like that, you know, we can't really do that. We have to, you know, to the best of our knowledge, you know, make sure with simulations and all of that sort of stuff that it has enough thrust to get off the ground, and like estimate its flight path as closely as possible. But, you know, rocket fuel is expensive, and it's also, I mean, it's a dangerous hobby. So we typically just get like one launch, and hopefully everything that we did was, you know, correct enough for it to be successful.
And now that you've gotten your L2, like, what are you doing now?
Yeah, so the whole purpose really of me going through this certification process is whenever I got in the high-powered rocketry club and I realized that that NASA student launch competition was a way that seniors could do their senior design project, I got really heavily involved in the club and started like helping to build the rocket quite a bit. And I found out that that's what the Structures Lead does mostly, is they design all the airframe components and everything. And then they spend lots of time carefully putting it together and making sure like the parts can withstand the loads and everything. And so I wanted to prepare myself as much as possible for that role and to learn how everything goes together in a rocket. So the L1 and L2 process really helped out with that.
To get a little bit off topic, this year you participated in Lego Brick Build. How did that go?
Lego Brick Build was fun. I'd never done it before. But yeah, I was a station leader. We did Alka-Seltzer rockets, which is an idea that I thought of for Sierra. Basically, there was a little Lego brick on top of the film canister. It was like super glued on there. And you could fill the film canister with water and then throw an Alka-Seltzer tablet in, turn it over, and then it would pop and go. But yeah, the children, they would make little rockets out of their Legos, and we would just stick that onto the brick on top of the film canister and launch those. And it worked really great. You know, we had some that went like 25 feet and some that like barely even got off the ground, but it was a lot of fun.
Does that remind you of your retreat as a trans for having to make bottle rockets?
Yeah. So that was like the last day of my retreat. Our activity was building bottle rockets, which is another thing that's a lot more difficult than it looks like. It was actually our final assignment in my intro to aerospace class, was to make a water bottle rocket that like worked extremely well, using math and everything. But for the transfer retreat, it was very much kind of like just wing it kind of. it was, to compare, it's more like when I was in elementary school and we're just building things. We made some fins and everything. And I made a parachute out of a trash bag and some dental floss. And I mean, it flew and the parachute deployed and I was very happy with it. But yeah, it seems that sometimes the more you think about the design and everything, the less successful that design can be. Like, we tend to overthink things sometimes. So there needs to be a pretty delicate balance there between just using some intuition and also thinking things through a bit.
And since we're on retreat, we've actually both been retreat leaders and you've done it for the last 2 years. And I don't know about you, but I'm guessing since you've done it twice, you really enjoyed it, because I really enjoy being retreat leader and just getting with my team, getting to know them, being very competitive. I don't know about your team, but my team for the freshmen pretty much won every single event except one. And we are thus called Superior Beings. And I think it was a great name, and I gave them that name before they even got into school in August. So I think it worked out pretty well, and I don't know if I manifested it or something, but I mean, we beat everyone in almost everything.
Okay, well, yeah, I don't know if my teams in the past 2 years have been really competitive or not, but I certainly did enjoy being a retreat leader, just because I understand that those first few days are just, they matter a lot. You know, as a transfer student, I acknowledge that transfer shock is extremely real. I'd never lived anywhere but in my parents' house, and we had never moved. So like leaving my parents' house and like coming to Raleigh for the first time and like living on my own for the first time, it was just all a very overwhelming thing. And then I'm surrounded by all these engineering students, and just, I felt like I didn't belong at all. Every transfer student is going to go through this. And so it was important to me to kind of be a face at the transfer retreat for the past 2 years, to just say, like, listen, I know how this feels right now, but I promise you it's going to get better. And also just like giving them as many tips as I can possibly give them, just to try to make them feel more welcome and to, prepare them as much as I can for life at NC State and within the program. So.
And you really had a different experience compared to the new transfers, because class of 2024 is the last class that's only 25 students. And also you had classes with the traditional class. And remember, I'm class of 2025, and we had class together. And we had a mix of both transfer and traditional. So what do you think about kind of the split that's going on that will pretty much be gone once you graduate?
Yeah, so I mean, I understand the necessity of the split, right? Because there just are so many people now. The incoming transfer class is like quite literally doubled since I was a new student here. So I understand the necessity of it, but I do miss hanging out with a lot of my first year friends, just because, I did have a class with them, and just a lot of really good experiences with them overall. So I encourage, the new transfer students, if you haven't really mingled with the first years much, definitely do that, because they're great people, just like the rest of the transfers. They're here for a reason. They're good people. So definitely try hanging out with them.
And even though there is a bigger split going on, like, there are trips that people can go on and really be together. I know Mount Sikos was a really big thing for you with making friends. You still hang out with a lot of the people you went on Mount Sikos with your first year, like Jamel, Samad, even though Jamel's graduated.
Yeah. The first time I went on Mount Sikos, that was really transformational for me. That like shifted my perspective from feeling like I didn't belong in the program because of transfer shock and, other things, but to really feeling like I belonged. That is easily like one of the top most transformational experiences I've ever had in my life. I still hang out with Jamel and Samad, and like Jamel was a traditional student that he graduated 2 years ago now, I believe. Samad, he's a traditional student that graduates the year after I do. And so I kind of have friends just throughout the program now. The second time I went on Mount Sikos, it was the same kind of thing. I met traditional students for class of 25 and stuff like that. So it definitely helps in those trips to branch out of like your cohort and your comfort zone and everything, and just people that you might have never spoken to otherwise can become your very best friends. So I definitely encourage that.
Thanks for joining us on this episode. If you enjoyed our conversation and want to hear more, be sure to subscribe and give us 5 stars on whichever platform you're listening on. If you're a prospective student and are interested in learning more about the program, shoot us an email at goodnightscholarship@ncsu.edu. I'm Soto, and remember, no matter what time of day you're tuning in, we always hope that you're having a good night.